As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through.
Welcome to Anything is Potable. I'm not going to do the yelling part because that feels embarrassing. I am Sam J.M. Packard, professional sports fan. I've made half my personality being a fan of the Boston Celtics. I am joined, as always, by El Nino, the kid, the god, the legend himself.
What's the other half of your personality?
Justice, baby, justice. We can talk more about plea bargaining. That seemed to go over well at the end of last podcast. But no, we are here to talk about the Celtics' horrible, horrible performance in Game 3 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. I am joined, as always, by Jay King, who is down in Miami and got to witness this just embarrassing performance live and in person. And Jay, I'll just let you have the floor and give your thoughts on what the hell happened tonight.
Nothing good.
Nothing
good at all. That was a stunning loss. It was a gutless loss. The Celtics got scored on early. They got scored on a lot. They could not stop Caleb Martin, Duncan Robinson, or Gabe Vincent. They got just beat up in the first half, mostly by three-pointers. A lot in transition. And then just kind of seemed to let go of the rope. Marcus Smart had a great rebound early in the third quarter. And one actually brought the Celtics within 12 points.
Yeah, that was a bit
within 12 points. It seemed doable in that moment. It was not. Their defense hasn't been what it used to be all season, even though they finished high in the rankings, and they just got whacked by the Heat offense. Just whacked.
And it was like, again, the Heat are shooting out of their mind, but at some point you have to stop Duncan Robinson drives to the hoop. You can't just let him get easy buckets and turn him into a playmaker, throw in alley-oops, and then throw in simple passes to wide open Gabe Vincent. Like, yes, the Heat shot 56% from the field and 54%, and that's well above what you would expect them to shoot, but the Celtics just did not have any resistance whatsoever, could not consistently get a stop. It felt like they, whatever their approach was into the game, they were immediately just like very upset with every single call they didn't think they were getting. Complaining a lot about that, just didn't seem locked into this game whatsoever. Jason Tatum, 14 points, 6 of 18, not good. Jaylen Brown, 6 of 17, 12 points, also not good. Both of those guys combined to shoot 1 for 14 from 3. The Celtics shot 26%. They got to the magic number of attempting 40 threes, which is, you know.
But a lot of that was like some of that was Peyton Pritchard and Sam Hauser firing late in the fourth quarter while the starters had already been benched.
Oh, a lot of it was that, yes. I do concur. The starters did launch a number of threes, 7 for Brown, 7 for Tatum, 5 for Al Horford, 6 for Derek White. And Horford and White actually made some. Marcus missed all three, but it's just like at some point in the third quarter, it was just painfully obvious that this is like they don't have it and there's just no chance of them coming back into it. Even though they were generating, I guess, better looks in the third quarter, they just didn't come to compete in this game. And a lot of comments are going to be made about Joe Mazzulla after the game, just being like, yeah, he fell on the sword for the team. He was asked if there was lost a locker room or if there's a disconnect in the locker room, confusion about the phrasing of that. But he basically said, yeah, whatever he did, he was not telling the team to go out and lose by 28. And so, like, and he fell on the sword from that one. What did you think of Mazzulla's kind of post-game press conference and him trying to take responsibility for that, where it feels like it's a lot on the players on this one?
Yeah, I think it's a lot on the players. So the one thing, he said they lost their defensive identity. And I don't want to pretend like the offense was good either, because it wasn't. They had 6 turnovers in the first quarter. They have not been able to deal with all of Miami's help, and they have not been able to target the weak links in Miami's rotation, like Kevin Love, who couldn't even move out there, but they weren't going at him. They have not been able to generate three-pointers with the same consistency they did most of the season, and that's obviously been a huge focus from Eric Spoelstra. He said at one point that the Celtics can't win if they don't make threes, which seems to be pretty true.
Accurate representation of the Celtics this entire season.
Yeah, but the one thing about that defensive identity and where at this point it has you questioning what Mazzulla's done to get here, I just felt like he always emphasized offense. And that's a huge change from Ime Udoka, who was only about the defense. He only cared about that. He wanted them. He always played bigger guys, always played bigger front courts. Always wanted Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum at the 2 and 3 as much as possible. And it just felt like from the start, Mazzulla changed that emphasis. And I think like doing that made sense. The Celtics ran out of offense in the playoffs last year. They could not handle.
I was going to say last year's playoff run, they were terrible, terrible on offense. So
they could not handle Golden State's defense. Like offense just went to shit in the fourth quarters of games. But they could always rely on their defense. And so Mazzulla came in knowing what happened last year and started Derek White almost all season, even when Robert Williams was healthy enough to play and play big minutes. Went away from Grant Williams, whose size and physicality, even though he has some warts as an individual defender, were important for the Celtics defense. Even earlier in the series, plays Peyton Pritchard in game one, instead of Grant, who can at least be a body to use on Bam, on Jimmy, who I thought the only time the Celtics looked any good today was in the second quarter when Grant was playing center and playing a ton of help defense and doing a really good job with it. So just kind of every decision Mazzulla made all season seemed to be designed for offense, seemed to be designed to shoot threes and use that to then get to the hoop. And somewhere along the way, they just lost their defensive way. And they finished second in defense. Like, it wasn't the worst defense by any stretch of the imagination. They just weren't invincible like they were last year. And I would say even in the finals when Steph Curry went bonkers, the Golden State Warriors were still significantly worse as an offense than they were during the regular season against the Celtics.
Yeah, I
mean, they don't have that anymore. Like, guys, Trae Young had a great, like, 3 or 4 games in that series, 3.5 games.
Did we lose you, Jay King? Seems like we did, so I'm going to keep on talking. The defensive identity of this team just didn't show up at all. And we talk about defensive habits or championship habits forming, and it felt like they could never get stops or like get back to just getting back to that identity. And saying they like admitting they lost their defensive identity is quite damning. It's never something they could really just like, all right, for the next five possessions, we're absolutely going to get stops here. And that's what they needed to do in the multiple stretches in the first half of this game. They actually did a decent job of it in to close the first half. They closed the first half on a 9-2 run. It just so happens that they're already down by 22 at that point. So they were only cutting the game to 15. It's still extremely annoying that Gabe Vincent scored 29 points. It was 11 for 14 tonight, and Caleb Martin was 7 for 11, and Duncan Robinson was 7 for 11. A lot of those points came in the second half, where it's just kind of a joke of a game. But at some point, like the Heat are shooting an absurd percentage, and the Celtics are not matching that on their end of the court. And you're just never going to win a basketball game or a basketball series when you're getting completely outshot from three. And for whatever reason tonight, it felt like the Celtics just didn't show up with enough defensive intensity, just letting too many guys beat them off the dribble. And I understand going away from the two big lineup because their offense really wasn't working when that was in, and so they just never really figured out a way in which they could play both ends of the court, one end defensively, one end offensively. And Jay's right. It feels like Missoula's emphasis this entire season has been on the offensive end of just being outscoring teams, pace and space, and scoring as many threes as possible. And they did not have an answer whatsoever when that wasn't necessarily working for them. There was no defensive identity to fall back on. And they didn't have a defensive lineup, but the two bigs, that was good enough offensively. Hello?
Are you listening? Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you.
All right, I got tossed off. I don't know where you stopped listening to me. I went on a long-ass rant, and then I realized that I wasn't in the live room anymore. But...
Well, I kind of took it over for you. I was mostly talking about their lack of defensive identity. I kind of merged that into Missoula's emphasis on offense and how they never, even with their more offensive lineup, if that wasn't clicking, they didn't have a defensive thing they could fall back on. And their defensive lineup didn't get enough time in this season to like kind of like have a go-to offense. And so despite their versatility, despite all of their depth, and it's funny that we're talking about the season as it's they still have one game left to play. But it's over, folks. But they just haven't found a five-man unit that can do both defense and offense at this point.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, tonight was just bad. Just wasn't good. No part of it was good. No part of it was at all promising. No part of it suggested they have any life left. And this is a team, like, honestly, there will be talk about how they don't have heart, whatever. This is a team that has come back from a lot of deficits and typically played their best with the backs against the wall and has, even this season, like, they won Game 6 on the road in Philly. They smacked Philly in Game 7. They're a tough team. But for whatever reason, like, the Heat just broke them. Absolutely broke them. So.
They had a plus 18 advantage on the offensive glass. Or no, plus 20 advantage on the offensive glass tonight. And lost by 26 points. Which is just not something that normally happens. Like, the Heat have shot the ball absolutely ridiculously. You have to give them credit for doing that and having the players who can step up and do that, and you have to discredit the Celtics for not making any like those shots particularly difficult and letting these guys get into rhythm. But yeah, it's just in game one, they played decently and then just got destroyed in that third quarter. In game two, they played pretty well, but then lost it down the stretch of the fourth quarter. And it just felt like they, particularly Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, just didn't show up tonight because I feel like they know they're overmatched in this series, which is weird because they should have more talent, or they knew, or they gave up on the coach, or whatever the reason is, but they just didn't. They didn't compete tonight, and like it's weird because they did so in Game 6 against the Sixers, they did so in Game 7 against the Sixers, but for whatever reason tonight they just didn't have it, and I have no idea if they're going to even try and show up in Game 4, but at this point, after seeing what they did in Game 3, there's no reason to believe they're going to be like, oh, now we're going to win one for the Gipper and like give total effort for 48 minutes in Game 4.
Yeah, Al Horford said it's just part of their journey, and it's like, no, man, this is the end of your journey. Like, that's it. that was a must-win game. Nobody comes back from down 3-0. Can't see the Heat with Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and Caleb Martin giving up a 3-0 lead.
The king, Caleb Martin.
I am in a, it must have been a, like a Celtics room for some of the Celtics party that was here in Miami. And on the mirror, it says unfinished business.
Oh, it certainly is unfinished. It certainly have not approached to finishing the business whatsoever.
Yeah, the thing about unfinished business is that sometimes it stays unfinished. Or in the Heat's case, sometimes it becomes finished on the other side.
Well, they've finished their Eastern Conference business, but it's fun to be, like, I never knew I was a big Nuggets fan until tonight. And so that's going to be a fun part of the NBA Finals that doesn't start until June 1st. We just get to wallow in the Celtics' failure for the next week. That's going to be awesome.
What did you think about Mazzulla's press conference?
I thought it was... One, it's like a classic Brad Stevens move, was what I thought. It's like, if you read The Growth Mindset, it's all about like leaders need to take full accountability for everything. And if you like fail, it is your fault. And so I wasn't really surprised by Mazzulla kind of doing that. The clip got tweeted out that he like he had just admitted to losing the locker room, where I think he just admitted that, like, yeah, obviously something's not working, and so I think that kind of got taken out of context.
Yeah, the question was, I don't want to say you've lost the locker room, but is there a disconnect between you and the players? Like, is your message not getting through, basically? And his answer to me was basically like, yeah, no shit, we just got fucking smacked in a game that we needed.
Like, clearly so the message is not getting through, yeah.
Yeah, that was my take on it. Like, does it look like my message was getting through, bro? They shot 63% for the first three quarters. I didn't take it as him saying, like, these guys hate me. They actively aren't doing what I told them. It was more like, did you see what happened out there? There's clearly a disconnect because I didn't tell them to go play like punks.
Yeah. And, like, the more I was thinking about it and, like, looking at the people's response on Twitter, like, people are – no one has ever had a good tweet with a good idea in it. Twitter's only good for jokes and GIFs and things like that. But people are just, like, freaking out. Fire Mazzulla. Trade Jaylen Brown. We can get to the off-season stuff when it actually becomes the off-season. But, like – and this is absolutely me making excuses for Joe Mazzulla right now. Because I'd, like – yes – Eric Spoelstra has been a far better coach in this series, but I don't know. It just feels like a guy who's in his first deep playoff run who got thrust into being a head coach with 3 days to prepare. And, I don't know. I just don't know what the necessarily expectations are for a first-year head coach to a guy who's 34 years old and I don't think had any even front of the bench experience before this. And so I think he's like clearly done a lot of good things in the league, but like just the kind of, it's tough for him to come in with championship expectations. That's not to say there's not bunches of things he can improve upon, but it's just like wild that people expect him to be as good as Eric Spoelstra, or like right now when it's his first time ever in an Eastern Conference Finals or in a playoffs or anything like that. And maybe that's probably,
yeah, and we can unpack some more of this stuff later once the season actually ends, which it probably will soon. But another thing is, like, they just lost a ton of talent from their staff in general. So it's not just like Joe, it's not Joe alone. It's like they lost Will Hardy, who was a great coach in Utah, one of the best coaches in the league this year. They lost Ime, who was a great coach in Boston last year, really impactful, helped lead their turnaround. They lost Damon Stoudemire to Georgia Tech, who was, outside of Aaron Miles, who played 19 games in the NBA, the only guy on the staff with NBA experience. So by the end of the season, they had like a bare bones staff, and there's just like they lost so much intelligence and experience from the staff they had last season. So, and you can pin that on the Celtics for not hiring someone to fill those guys' spots. But I think at the beginning of the season, especially in Joe's seat, it's like, Ime's guys were his staff, and if you hire someone over Ime's guys, that could just create more dissension than there already was. So it was a really tough job. It has been a really tough job. In tonight's game, though, like, the thing that stood out to me most from these first three games is the Heat, like, they have obvious weaknesses. They have Kevin Love in their starting lineup, who can't really guard. They have Cody Zeller as their backup big man, who should not be able to stay with many guys on the Celtics. They have smaller guards who should be targets for the Celtics wings, who are 6'7", 6'8", all NBA players. And the Celtics have had so much trouble getting to those weaknesses, exploiting those weaknesses. And then the Heat come down and all they do is run one screen, and all of a sudden Jimmy Butler has a Derek White matchup, which he's super comfortable in. And Derek White deserved to be second team all defense this year. He was awesome at defense all year. That's just a brutal matchup for him. And he's not big enough, not strong enough to deal with Jimmy in the post on the bounce. And the Heat, like, they just get to that easily, and that's it. And it's like,
do you think the offense is too reliant on like the free flowing decision making, and like we're just going to drive and kick, drive and kick, drive and kick, and hopefully generate threes that way? Where it's just like, you're right, because it doesn't feel like it was like deliberate enough, especially when it comes time to the playoffs, where it's like very important for you to take advantage of specific matchups. It never felt like, and it hasn't felt like at all this year, that Joe Mazzulla's offense is, I guess at points to the third quarter in game two, they really attacked Kevin Love. I feel like there was times against the Sixers where they really went at Maxey, and like there's been points where they've attacked specific guys, but it feels like otherwise the offense is like, just get in there and we'll run some stuff, but it's just going to make the right read, 0.5 decision making, and it's less deliberate about attacking the specific weaknesses of the other team, and it's more about just like trying to get into like good action.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say that. Like, in the second round against Philly, the Celtics scored more points per possessions than they did during the regular season when they were an awesome offense. And so in this series, yes, their offense has fallen off for sure, and they haven't been able to get some of those threes. But, like, Malcolm Brogdon had probably four wide-open off-the-dribble threes tonight. And for some reason, the Celtics were just airballing everything.
It did not help. It did not help that they missed everything. And then just the turnovers. Like, the Heat play very physical basketball and do a very good job of just, like, swiping – getting their hands on the ball on drives, and it felt like the Celtics had the same struggles last year against the exact same Heat team, but just have not, for whatever reason, figured out how to kind of deal with the this kind of swarming help defense from the Heat, and just the 6 turnovers in the first quarter leading to 9 points for the Heat on like turnover. It's just like is brutal, and just like not what you need to when you need to start a game and get out to a lead and actually like try to have a chance in this series.
Yeah, and I like turnovers was an issue that they didn't deal with as much this year. They took care of the ball during the regular season. They took care of the ball during the first couple of rounds of the playoffs. Like they were much better at that. But this Heat team, they have taken away the easy three-pointers. They have really limited the Celtics on that front, and the Celtics just haven't had enough answers. And Al Horford just kind of his offense disappearing has been really tough. Like that has been a big deal. And I don't know.
And Jaylen Brown's offense disappearing has been a
Jaylen, it seems like Jaylen has just been super eager to just make stuff happen. And he was very good in the first quarter tonight. He was the only reason the game didn't get away from the Celtics like right away. But a lot of it was just like he's been super eager and too eager. And if you're not patient against this Heat team, if you're not willing to like really run stuff and execute, then they're going to force you into tough stuff, and they're going to be trying to take charges, and they're going to force you into some turnovers. And I just felt like all series long, or most of the series, he just hasn't been willing to just trust the offense. And that's been a problem for him sometimes in the past. It was definitely a problem tonight and in game two. And like I said, like they used to be able to fall back on their defense. And throughout this playoffs, that has really come and gone. They haven't been able to trust it in big moments. The second half of game two, or the fourth quarter of game two, was just like they couldn't get a rebound. They weren't tough enough. They couldn't get a stop, and it was just like they didn't have any help on Jimmy Butler. And then tonight they helped on Jimmy Butler, and the other guys just killed him. And once the other guys started going, the Celtics just kind of seemed to pack it in. Wow.
Yeah. At what point, like, I hate this portion of sports talk analysis, but it's like, is it part of the – it's so bizarre because we've seen Jason Tatum in Game 6 respond and be resilient and, like, after having a terrible start, make those 4 threes, then have the Game 7 that he did. We've seen him respond against the Bucks last year and against the Heat this year. But, like, him, Jaylen Brown, just didn't have it tonight, didn't have the effort, or we're playing too tight, we're complaining about the refs, just, and it's hard to get into the chemistry of the team. I don't know if you saw Wash's tweet about, like, Jaylen Brown's press conference and him having a lot of, like, hesitation, and, like, do you think there's, like, something going on in the locker room where this team doesn't like each other, or is there anything on that front?
I don't think so, because they haven't thrown anybody under the bus. Like even when Jaylen screwed up in Game 5 of the Philly series, guy like Marcus Smart said, who has gone at Jaylen in the past, has like stood up for him and said, you know, that I'll live with him making a read any time of the day, even though it was clearly the worst read he could have possibly made in that decision. So I don't feel like there is, but there's definitely like they stopped playing good basketball consistently when they came back from the All-Star break. And they ever since then, like I would say even in the first round against the Hawks, that wasn't like a promising series. That wasn't where they just beat the pants off a Hawks team that like could have missed the playoffs. They let Atlanta get into rhythm. They dropped game five at home with a chance to close out the series and a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. And so it's just like they haven't reached that elite level that they did last season and probably the first like 26 games of this season when they were 21-5. They just haven't reached that in a while.
Do you think there's too much variance on like three-point shooting? Because like they were 21-5 when they were shooting 45% from three, and like maybe just feels like a flawed design.
Whereas Packer, what's up with your headphones, man?
Are you reading the comments now? People are very upset with it. Can you?
I just got a text from the man, the myth, the legend, Marcus Thompson.
I can tell Mark. I appreciate Marcus Thompson tuning in. This is the same headphone setup used all season.
And the same one that never works.
If you plug in headphones to the Athletic app, you should be able to hear it better. But I feel bad for disappointing Marcus Thompson. He's a great writer. Go buy his book.
Books,
plural. Also, feel free to listen to the actual podcast version. We'll have much better audio there. This is just in the live room. But I guess, do you think it's just based on the identity of just like, this is an offensive team and we're going to live and die by the three, and it's just not a sustainable way to win in the playoffs?
I mean, the Warriors won four championships in eight seasons with that. That seems like
great defense every single year. They had a 1-4 championship. I guess they had Kevin Durant for two of these years, but they still had a very solid defense in their championship runs.
And that's to me the piece that the Celtics that went missing for the Celtics this season. Like, you're not going to be great offensively every night. There are going to be times when you don't go 20 for 42 from the 3-point arc. Can you win a game when you don't do that? And the Celtics haven't been able to. Haven't always been able to. And the Heat know it, man. Like, Spoelstra was telling it to him. Those dudes play so hard, and they're so tough. They're so committed. I cannot believe I picked Celtics in five in this series. What an idiot.
I mean, you and ESPN said the Celtics had a 97% chance of winning, so all the analytics and all the numbers.
Well, that was about the time everyone should have known that the Heat were winning the series. As soon as ESPN said it was 97-3, that's outrageous.
It was purely what the analytics say, and it's based on the numbers that turned in during the regular season, and the Celtics were the top two in defense and offense, and so I understand why the analytics said that. But yeah, that the numbers don't play the basketball. Here's a question for you. Do you think Jason Tatum feels foolish for showing up to the game in an all-white suit?
Yes. Yes, I do. That's a suit you've got to win with.
When you show up in the Miami Vice suit.
You cannot show up to your post-game press conference after getting whacked by 26 points, was it? And wear that. In Miami, nonetheless. Like, rocking a Miami outfit in Miami. You can't. I would have shown up in my jersey to the press conference.
But at the same time, do you think Al Horford feels foolish for wearing a very colorful blouse? Because I feel like it's less bad for Al than the all-white suit Jason Tatum was wearing.
Did you call it a blouse?
Yeah, it's one of the things I do. It's kind of a bit. Refer to
good bit, man.
Blouses. Yeah, no, I think it's funny. It plays. People seem to like it.
Good bit.
The blouse, King. Evaluate the blouse.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What disturbed you most about the first three games of this series?
Disturbed me the most was game three of just not showing up whatsoever.
But like, are you worried long term? Are you worried about Joe Mazzulla? Like, what is the most distressing thing to you about what's happened over the first three games?
I think it's honestly, it's like Al Horford, just like how dependent this team is on Al Horford and Al Horford's offense. Like, I went back and looked at his playoff run last year, and he shot 48% from three, and that felt like it was huge for them, and just in order to generate spacing and how kind of reliant they are on them playing five out and getting three-pointers that way. And if he doesn't show up, it feels like it's just so much more of a lift for the rest of the team to try and do things. And like, I don't know. I still believe that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart are good players and can be good players moving forward, and that they will all get better next season, and Joe Mazzulla will get better next season. But like, I don't know how you necessarily build around them. That being said, like, is Rob Williams going to be the player he was before the injury last year ever again? Because he's just what has not been consistent at all. Basically in these playoffs, and he just doesn't seem to have the same bounce that he did when it was like prime Rob. This is the best defensive team ever. And so I guess the Bigs situation is the most disturbing thing, because it feels like the Jays are going to be fine, but like moving forward, how do you surround them with guys who can kind of put them in the best position to win?
Yeah, and Horford was really good most of the season. Shot an extremely high percentage from three most of the season. This might be that he just hit a slump at the worst time, but it was bad, and he wasn't as effective, I would say, on either end of the court. And it's not just the three-pointers either. It's like his two-pointers almost entirely went away this season. Like, he had a post-up on Max Strus today, and I was like, oh, wow, Al scored a two. Like, that's weird. He wasn't able to beat switches. He never, ever gets to the free throw line. And those are, like, stuff around the margins that you can live with sometimes and most of the time. But he's taken two free throws all playoffs. Like, all playoffs, the guy has taken two free throw attempts. And like that can be a big deal when your center, most of the time he's playing center, can't get to the line, doesn't really make two-pointers. Like, you're just not putting a lot of pressure on the rim with your center, and it puts a lot on the other guys, the guards, the wings, to get there and create advantages. So, yeah, I would say Horford's play, to me, he'll probably need to transition to being a bench guy at some point over the next 2 years during his contract extension, maybe next year. And Rob needs to come back and just be better, bouncier than he was this season. Those guys were still really effective when they were on the court together defensively, but the Celtics defense really seemed to slip when they weren't together. Like last year, they were typically able to defend at a high level most of the time, no matter what. And maybe it's just that they didn't utilize those guys together very often and played a lot smaller and everything like that. And then the Brogdon acquisition was awesome most of the year, right? And I really think he's given the Celtics, like he gave them a new dimension. But it also put like just a lot of guards in their rotation. And yes, they're all big guards, but they're not 6'7", they're not 6'8". And I think that mattered to the Celtics defense. Like they played smaller because they had better guards, deeper guards. And but I guess, I mean, Pritchard played a fair amount last year. That wasn't the only change, but just felt like they could have used another 6'7" wing, and maybe they should have just played Grant Williams more for the season. The Joe Mazzulla thing.
I do think playing Grant more is a kind of a natural solution if we're talking about Al Horford not being getting two-pointers and not being physical enough and them not having enough physical 6'8 people. Like, it feels like that we're just describing them needing to play Grant more. And Grant, albeit had a very great start to the season, and then kind of his year was very weird, getting like DNPs and things like that, and being kind of more less consistent in the middle of the year. So he didn't necessarily like cement his role or earn his role, but it does feel like he probably should have gotten more time and more consistent time in the playoffs, and especially just to start this series.
Yeah. That was a weird saga all season. Just a weird, weird thing.
Go for it.
The Mazzulla thing, like, it's hard to argue, impossible to argue that he hasn't been really outcoached in this series. That's pretty clear from how well the Heat are executing, to how the Celtics aren't, to how fourth quarters have gone, to the way the Heat have been able to hide their defensive liabilities, and the Celtics, who have fewer defensive liabilities, have not. He's 34, and it sucks for the Celtics that this is his first time, and he's still learning and has a lot to learn. But I also think they chose him because they trust that he will learn. And like, looking back on the season, and it's not over yet, we'll still unpack a lot of it later, but he handled so much so well, from the transition from Udoka to instilling better offensive principles to getting just like, they won 57 games. They came back against Philly in game 6 and 7, and he eventually got to the lineup change that they needed in that series. But I was reminded while watching the three games of this series, like, of my guy Jason Quick's story on Eric Spoelstra, where 2011 finals, I think that was his rookie year, right? The first LeBron year. And they lost in the finals that year, and apparently he just holed himself up in the film room all summer and just was like, I need to figure this out. I need to come back and be able to find solutions for these guys, put them in better positions. And to me, it's like, sometimes you're not going to know how to handle things when you're a rookie head coach. So I think that really, that part of it sucks for the Celtics, that he's not ready to be an elite head coach right now. But I also think that they chose him because they believe that he will put in the time. He will find find how to handle this. And it's really bad timing. Ime Udoka put them in an awful spot. And it sucks for the Celtics is that, like, this is a year when they had every piece to win a championship. They're playing the 8 seed in the Eastern Conference Finals. This is, like, as golden an opportunity as you could possibly get. And so it would be extremely disappointing for them to get swept or even to lose this series. But I still think they have belief in Joe long term. And I think from everything that you hear about him, like, he is the type of guy who will put in the work to try to get it right and fix everything that he hasn't handled the best so far this season.
Yeah, if I can rely on anyone to have a crazy response to losing their first time in the playoffs and locking themselves in a film room and trying doing everything they can to figure it out, it's going to be Bazooka Joe. Now, we can get to the full eulogy of this team. We can do the full breakdown of what happens once they're officially out of this series. But they are not officially out. It takes 4 games. Many people have been tweeting that the Boston Red Sox lost game 3 of their series against the Yankees 19-8. All I'm asking, Jay King, is there a chance? Is there a chance that they become the first team in NBA history to come back from a 3-0 deficit?
Did it look like there was a chance tonight?
Did there look like a chance in game 3 when the Celtics or when the Red Sox lost 19-8? And then you can't let them win one, because then they got Pedro on the mound in game 5 and Schilling on the mound in game 6, and anything can happen in game 7.
So who's Pedro in this scenario?
Good question. I guess Al Horford shows up and gives you like a 7-for-7 game from 3. Would be Pedro. They're both Dominican. I think that's a solid connection. I don't know who Schilling is. They need to be someone pitching like with a...
I feel like Marcus Smart would be the bloody sock guy.
Yeah, because he doesn't feel like he's fully healthy every time. Like, there was that play in game 1 where he just came down and looked like he hurt his back. So, yeah, Marcus Smart is the game 6 guy. So it's really... they just need to win game 4. And will they show up is the big question. I just think it's like it's a pride thing. Like, they don't even have to win, but to, like, not turn in a terrible effort like they did tonight feels just kind of important for general vibes moving forward towards next season. And for people not just, like, absolutely losing their shit on Twitter. Just so I don't have to be annoyed by that.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody should annoy Packard on Twitter. Actually, just please add him with your craziest theories right now. I want to drive Packard crazy.
What have I ever done to you except be supportive? What do you
should think? I really answer that?
Yeah, sure. Let's ask that.
No, you've pretty much been supportive, I would say.
Yeah, honest and open dialogue here. What do you think happens in game 4? And we'll end on that.
They're going to get swept.
Well, no, but, like, is it swept? Like, is it a, like, what type of heartbreaking loss do you think it is? Is it a totally no-show, like, game 3? Is it a late fourth quarter collapse, like, game 2? Or is it, like, just get destroyed in the third quarter, like, game 1? What type of terrible loss?
They'll be close for a half, and then Jimmy... we'll do some crazy stuff, and the Heat will pull away in the second half.
I think they lose on not a buzzer beater hit by the Heat, but a missed buzzer beater. Like, they have a chance to win, kind of like Marcus Smart in game 4 of the Sixers series, where it's a wide open look. They could have extended the series, and I think a Jaylen Brown shot hits back rim, and that's how they lose game 4.
I mean, sure.
If that happens, we'll be here to talk about it. If they happen to win, we'll also be here to talk about it. No matter what happens, we'll be forced to talk about this nonsense basketball team decided to dedicate our lives to. Seems like Jay gets paid for it. He's professional. I guess I call myself a professional sports fan, but it's really more of a choice for me. Feels like a mistake every time I've watched them play the Miami Heat this series, but you know what? We move on to game 4 and we'll see what happens. Thank you guys for listening. Sorry for the mic issues. I don't know how to improve it at this point. It just happens in the live room. I guess I need to buy better AirPods at this point, but that's probably not going to change for game four. But I appreciate you staying with us. I appreciate everyone listened on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks for listening to this episode of Anything Is Possible.